And I forgot to advertise this, but everyone else is lost. We're going to just run through a couple of, to me, I think some halachos of Pesach that are sometimes not so well known. So just a quick overview. I think today's class, I'm sure there'll be some follow-up questions, but I hope to just give... Yeah.
Rabbi, can we use the light grape juice at the Seder?
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Good. We're good. We're set for the day. We're set for the day. Okay, you're good. okay, so we're just going to jump all around, but I really just want to highlight areas where things that I've found over the years that people have not, you know, that there's a lack of clarity about. So my goal also, my mindset is that it's a chag, it's a festival, it's supposed to be joyful. So with that in mind, I, you know, think about the halachos in that framework. Obviously, we want to be faithful to what is needed. And there are wonderful, wonderful customs that have developed. But sometimes those customs could be a little overbearing and sometimes they're not even customs. Okay, so with that in mind, let's jump in. So we'll start with cleaning for Pesach. So biblically, from a biblical perspective, a person could relinquish their ownership of all their chametz, and you are set. Okay, you don't have to clean at all, aside from your kitchen, which we'll get to. But for your entire house, you could just say, I am making everything in my house hefker, ownerless, and you're done. Okay, but we're not done. Our sages were concerned, right, that if you do so, if you're going to have chametz sitting around, even if it's ownerless, if it's in your house, you're going to go, oh, I have to see a cookie over here, I'm going to eat it. And they were concerned that you're going to go ahead and eat those things. And therefore, they said, no, making it ownerless is not enough. You have to do more to get rid of it, okay? So everything I'm about to say has nothing to do with the kitchen. The kitchen has its own set of parameters, and we'll explain why in a moment. But let's think about the rest of your house. So after, you know, when we're leading up to Pesach, we've taken, outside of our kitchen, right? Most of our food is not outside of our kitchen, I imagine, right? And, you know, you've set aside some food items that you're going to sell. Okay, so we're not talking about those items. We're talking about the items that you want to clean for, okay? So leading up to Pesach, you have food in your kitchen. We're going to ignore that for a second. You have the food that you've designated that you are going to sell over Pesach. You've put that somewhere. Good. Now we're talking about cleaning the rest of the house because there's a cookie here, there's some crumbs over here, whatever it is, okay? So again, you've already put aside all the food that you're going to sell. And so what's left around the house is the crumbs, is the things you've missed. Technically, you could just say, I relinquish my ownership to all those things, which is what we do right before Pesach. There is a statement that we make, both the night of the bedikah, the night of the checking, as well as the next day at midday, find it in the Siddur, where we are mafkir. We relinquish ownership for all those items. And really, that's enough. Biblically, and the rabbis were concerned that you're going to find something and eat it. But what is their concern limited to? Their concern is limited to things that are really, truly edible. Okay, so what does that mean? That means two things. One, it has to be accessible. Okay? Meaning, how often do you put your hands behind your fridge? I hope the answer is never. Okay?
What about crumbs in the pocket?
So we'll get to crumbs in the pocket, right? So one is accessible. We'll get to that in a split second. So the first is accessible. So anything behind the fridge, anything behind a couch, anything under a bed, those are not areas that you are accessing on a regular basis. So bottom line is, even if there's a cookie, right? So I, you know, you have those grates, you know, with the it depends how your house is, you know, for your AC or HVAC, right? So I have a 2-year-old, so it's very possible that they've dropped, you know, numerous cookies through the, it's lots of fun. It's like that game, you know, to test their fine motor skills, you know, to put it through those grates. So there are cookies under those things, okay? So for mice, et cetera, it's probably a good idea to get rid of it. For a Pesach perspective, since I can't get my fingers in there, I could see it. I could see the cookie with my own eyes. I have no obligation to get rid of it. Again, you probably want to. But again, to move your fridge, to start pulling out grates, to move heavy furniture, you have zero obligation. If you want to do it, it's nice, but you have zero obligation to do that. That's accessibility. The second is, it has to be large enough that it's really considered substantial. This goes to your question, okay? And that means it has to be a kezias. A kezias is about the size of, you know, a modern egg, that let's say, like something like a golf ball, okay? That's the size that you have to worry about. Different versions. But let's just say it's about... It is an olive, but what size? A large olive. Yeah. But a modern... Let's just say it's about this big, okay? As opposed to crumbs. Let's just make things... So crumbs, you have no obligation to look out for crumbs, okay? So again, technically speaking, you don't have to go ahead and even sweep your house or vacuum. Again, you probably want to do that just because you clean. But from a Pesach perspective, don't blame, what my motto is like, don't blame Pesach. Okay, if you want to do it, amazing. Don't blame Pesach. Okay, so anywhere outside of the areas that you're eating, okay, if you're eating, it's a different story, which we'll get to in a moment. But anywhere outside of the areas that you're eating, your basement, your living room, not your dining room, your living room, your bedroom, those areas, you don't have to worry about crumbs because you are mafkir. You say, I have no responsibility. So the pockets in your clothing, you don't have to worry about those things. Again, there is a custom. It's nice. It's a beautiful thing. We go over the top. But it's important to know what's obligatory and what's not obligatory. If you're stressing out and you're finding yourself overwhelmed, don't go through the pockets. Don't, okay? If you have the time and it's something you always do and it's something that's meaningful to you, by all means, okay? So again, has to be accessible and it has to be edible. By accessible, it means you're easily, normally reached, okay? And by edible, it has to be something which is, let's just say the size of a golf ball as opposed to things like the size of a crumb. There are crumbs around the house. You don't have to worry about those things, okay? I just made your Pesach a little bit easier, Pesach prep a little bit easier? I hope so. Okay, fine, great. Fine, any questions on that? Good. Yes.
Is this being taped? I need to send it to my son.
This is being taped. Send it to your son. Okay. You could have him send all his complaints to me. Okay. Okay. So we've just cut out a good few hours of our Pesach cleaning, I hope. Okay. At least like 5, 6, 7 hours of our Pesach cleaning. Again, all these, I'll be the first. We move our couches and we vacuum, but we also like prioritize, right? Meaning that's extra. And you have to know that it's extra. It's nice. It's a, you know, but it's certainly not obligatory. You know, I grew up, my father went through every single book in the house, okay? That is beyond not extra, okay? It is, and my father had a trillion books, okay? But you don't have any obligation to do so, right? So again, we have to know what we're obligated to do, what we're not obligated to do. Accessible, edible, vacuuming your basement, you have zero obligation to vacuum your basement. You have zero obligation to move any furniture in the house, to go into behind fridges, things of that nature. No obligation whatsoever. If you wanna do it, great. If you don't, 100% fine.
Yes.
You do not have to dump the Lego in the bathtub. No, no, no. Again, you have to know. Look, some children are placed more cookies in places, okay? So our youngest happens to be more of like a cookie dropper than others, okay? Maybe we've just like loosened up a little bit. But so we find more cookies than we've found with other kids. You know, you speak crumbs, it's a few more cookies. If you know there's a chance that there's cookies in your Lego, by all means, but you don't have to dump it. You go quickly through it. No cookies. Great. We're done. Right? That's it. That's your Pesach cleaning for your toys. Okay? People are scrubbing their toys. You don't have to do that. You don't have to do that. Unless, okay, fine. You don't have to do that. Fine. Yes.
What happens if, you know, you didn't do that and all of a sudden let's say grandchildren over mm-hmm. whatever, or at one point in the year, and you didn't, and during Pesach you find chametz. What do you do with it then?
Okay. So very, very briefly, what you do with chametz that you find, if it's found during Chol HaMoed, you basically want to burn it. You want to burn it, so you go bring it outside, put it in a pan, light a little fire, a little thing. I don't think there's any legalities making a tiny little fire. You burn it. If you need to, you can flush it down the toilet. On Pesach, you cover it. You're not allowed to. It's muksa on Pesach itself. You cover it. You leave it. On Chol HaMoed, you get rid of it. Okay. All right. The one exception, very important exception to this whole rule, is the kitchen. Okay. The kitchen is the one area where on Pesach we have an additional thing, which is that you cannot even eat a drop of chametz. A drop meaning a crumb of chametz. So again, you can have a crumb of chametz in your basement. Okay. But you can't have a crumb of chametz in your food. That would be problematic. Okay. So everything I've said until now is not in the eating areas. In the eating areas, we're going to be much more stringent. Okay. So I'm going to be running through just a couple of different things. So let's talk about the kitchen and dining room table, places that you're eating. What a person should do is clean those very well. Right. Again, the rest of your house, you don't have to clean that well. Okay, if you have little kids, you have to look around to make sure there's no cookies. That's basically it, or major piece of chametz. My kid, the Purim thing, you know, so they all have like their candy stashes. Okay, find the candy stash, okay? Get rid of the candy stash, and then once you're done with that, you're really okay. But in the kitchen, dining room, so your tables, you want to clean very well. And then the custom is to cover the table with some form of a thick plastic cover, in addition to whatever tablecloth. Something that's not going to be ripped on Yom Tov to create an extra level of barrier. That's the typical custom, to have something plastic that's covering it. People tape it. You don't have to tape it down. You could tape it down just to make sure that it stays there. But to have some extra covering between the table that was cleaned well and what's on top of it. Yes.
One layer underneath?
Three, two. So the bottom line, as long as it's something which is not going to rip. So, you know, as time has gone on, the plastic has become much more durable. If you know, right? When we were like, I grew up with like plastic that like you could barely get your fingers on. You have to like go like this for 20 minutes. And now they have like plastic, which is like a rock, right? It should be something that's not going to rip. The point is that there's an extra barrier. That's the main thing. If you have very, very, very thin plastic that you know is not going to rip, okay, then one is sufficient. It's not a din. It's not a halacha in two or three. It's a halacha in not ripping. And so historically, over the past couple of decades, plastic was pretty lousy. But I think you have those like the heavyweight plastic nowadays. You gotta like cut them to rip them. Yeah. The main thing is that there's extra covering. Yeah, it's not as ideal to have a separate covering. Without getting into all the laws of Basar B'chalil, you know, how it transfers right now, frankly, it is a bit of a stringency, but it's a universal stringency. In other words, you'd have to, for it to cause something to get treif, you know, chametz stick, would take a whole bunch of, like a whole series of errors, which is extremely unlikely. I'd have to have hot touching directly onto another pot that's wet and hot. It's very unlikely, but that's a universal stringency that we place the layer to make sure that there is no access. Plastic is better. Any barrier that's going to prevent and is going to help. Yes, sir.
So I have a glass table in my kitchen.
Nice.
With boiling water on it.
Perfect. Yeah. According to many, that would be sufficient. So if you have a glass table, then according to some, that would be able to, you'd be able to kosher that table. And so there is, you know, we'll get to glass soon. There are different opinions about glass. I just want to put that out there.
A table versus a drinking glass would be
there are those who kosher drinking glasses as well for Pesach. I don't recommend it. It's not a universal. So to be clear, it's not a universal custom. Nowadays, historically, people had far fewer pieces of silverware and glassware. So people did kosher glass. It's hard to justify nowadays. It really is. So
I would think a table is different because you're not eating the table.
Correct. But it really revolves around the question, a more fundamental question of can you kosher glass or not? So there's a debate among Sephardim, Ashkenazim. There's certainly what to rely upon to go ahead, and we'll see. There's one area where many people, even Ashkenazim, will rely on koshering glass as well. But there is some question, but there's what to rely upon to do it that way. Many people do not kosher glass when it comes to Pesach. I'll leave it at that. But if that's what you do, it is 100% acceptable if you're pouring boiling water over the whole area.
Glass was soaking it for 3 days.
Yeah. That's how it's brought down. Exactly. That's 100% fine. You know, many families grew up doing that. You know, putting it in the bathtub or whatever it was and soaking it for 3 days. It's brought down in halacha. Nowadays, many people say like, okay, there's so many other dishes. Do we really need to? I think there's a footnote in the Shulchan Aruch. Well, if your husband's a glassmaker, then a glassblower. Yes. Oh, sorry. No. Okay. Okay. So again, in the kitchen, we want a drop of chametz is going to be problematic. So let's walk through koshering the kitchen very briefly. Okay. Very briefly. Let's talk about koshering the kitchen. The general principle when it comes to koshering is that kibolo kach polto. Okay, which means the way it's absorbed is the way it expunges, expels the flavor from it. Okay, so basically there are two things we need to think about. One is what was the level of heat and what was the nature of the heat that was used throughout the year? Okay, because you want to replicate that heat, and in doing so that expels the chametz from the item. That's one piece that we need to keep in mind. The other is a general rule whenever it comes to koshering, or most koshering, that we wait 24 hours before going through this process. Now, when I say we wait through 24 hours, it's important to note that we generally try not to use the item for 24 hours. But in truth, the main thing that we want to avoid is using it for hot items for 24 hours. So I'll always get a call frantically right before Pesach. Oh my gosh, someone just put some cold water in our sink. Can I kosher? The answer is yes. Save yourself a call. The main thing is that we're not using it for hot items. We generally try to avoid it entirely so that we don't confuse anything, but we always want to, but the halacha is you cannot use the item you are koshering for 24 hours prior, and after 24 hours of non-use, you could kosher it, but the main thing really is non-hot use for 24 hours, okay? Once we go through that 24 hours, let's talk about the sink. So how does the sink get hot? The sink gets hot because boiling water or boiling items get poured into it, whether it's from the actual tap, although the tap is probably not that boiling, right? Typically not. But you're probably pouring your noodles after you boil the water and whatever other stuff you cook and whatever. Shows how far my repertoire in the kitchen is. Okay, noodles. So whatever it is. So basically you're pouring boiling stuff into the sink, and therefore you want to be able to, and noodles are about as chametz as it gets. So you want to replicate that, right, in order to expel the chametz from it. So what do? You wait 24 hours, and then what you do is you fill a pot, a kettle, you know, with boiling hot boiling water. You wait till it boils, it bubbles, okay? Once it bubbles, okay, that once it hit that point, you then go and you pour hot water over every part of the surface. The sink takes a long time, okay? And the sink is a little complicated because it's also on these awkward angles, which are somewhat hard to reach, okay? But you try your best to basically reach every part, and it's not enough that you pour some water over here and it goes all the way down and it, no. You gotta basically pour the hot water over every part of it. And so basically, you know, there's a little stream. The stream basically, you know, it doesn't have to be a thick stream, a little stream, as it hits the surface, usually could get about this wide, usually about 3 fingers wide on the initial contact, okay? Once it starts spreading beyond that, then you have a problem, okay? Then it's already not considered the koshering. So the koshering is basically the initial stream. You want to go over the entire surface of the sink over and over until you basically have done through the whole sink. Again, the sink is my least favorite part of koshering, but you got to do it. The same would be true for the spout. Basically, you should turn the spout over and kosher it. Watch your fingers at that point. But basically, to turn it, clean the spout out as well as you can, and then to kosher it in the same fashion. Yes?
In terms of being used and being exposed to hot water, what if the hot water is somebody emptying their urn? Like, in other words, what if it's a completely non-chametz?
Yeah, so it could be. We don't know. I mean, over the course of the year, it's hard to say, like, definitively that there hasn't been any chametz.
In the
24 hours. Yeah, so that gets a little complicated if that, like, brings back anything within the 24 hours. So ask a local. Yeah, well, I'm going to leave that open-ended, if I may. Okay, but yeah. Okay. Okay, so that's the sink, okay? Let's talk. Yes?
So you have to turn the spout upside down. What if it's not turning? Can you just have the steam hit it?
Yeah, so if not, then we rely on the fact that the steam is going to hit it. But we clean it as well as possible. We rely on the steam hitting it. If you know, the newer ones, I guess, some of them do. You put a what? Sorry?
I know people who put cheesecloth.
How does that help? What is that?
You keep the cheesecloth on overpaste.
They keep it on overpaste.
Oh, so that helps for chametz, I suppose. It won't help for koshering, right?
No, but they kosher it, but then they still put cheesecloth.
And they still put it on top to block the...
Got it.
Right, so that would be more right. So cleaning, because cleaning is hard. The spout is actually extremely, again, the sink is not fun, but that's the hardest part to kosher. There are those who put in like a brick, you know, I'm sure maybe you've been, you know, heard like people filling it up with hot water, throwing like a burning brick into that. It is halachically better. It sounds like the biggest safety hazard in the world. I do not do bricks or blow torches. That's just not safe. Yes?
I think with some old sinks, you can actually unscrew.
Okay.
The end. Ah,
yes. That's right.
You could throw that into a pot.
You could put that, yes, good point. Yes, good point. Excellent. Yes, so that would be ideal to do that, yes. And we have done that in the past.
And a lot of it's plastic.
I'm sorry?
I have a filter, like a filter.
Right. A lot of it's made of plastic. So plastic's an interesting thing, which we're, you know, there is a big, so during, there's a major debate slash misnomer slash a lot, well, it's a major debate whether or not you could kosher plastic in general, okay? So, you know, many people are taught you cannot kosher plastic. Now, that's not so simple. It's a major debate whether you could kosher plastic. Everyone agrees if it's like very flimsy plastic, you can't kosher it. But, you know, a spout of a sink, which is firm plastic, you know, it's getting splashed with boiling hot water, or if you have dishes that are made of really hard plastic. The general approach in America, I would say the more conservative approach in America, in Israel, no one koshers plastic, period, okay? In America, I would say the more normative ruling, is what I tell people to do, is that during the year, we rely on those who say you could kosher plastic. Okay, so if you're, you know, I have a whole pile before Pesach, I'm going to kosher of all the bowls that went in the wrong, some of my kids' bowls went in the wrong dishwasher, whatever it is, I'm going to kosher them all before Pesach, okay? Because that's hard plastic, the dishwasher safe, it's hard plastic, I kosher it. On Pesach, many people are stringent and take the more stringent view and don't kosher plastic, okay? Although, there are those who do kosher plastic as well, even on Pesach. Okay, so if you're talking about koshering your sink, the only way to do it, so you know it's plastic. So the only way to do it is to basically to kosher the plastic. That's what you do. You know, there are other things in the kitchen that maybe you could avoid. Again, I'd recommend if you can to avoid koshering plastic on Pesach. But there certainly is what to rely upon. Major poskim who say that you could kosher plastic. Again, hard plastic could be kosher just like you kosher metal. Yes.
If you have the sink liners, because I have. Do you still have to do all that? I mean, I clean the sink and I put it.
If you have a full liner in the sink, then that's that. Then if it's a full liner, you don't have to kosher at all. That's the simplest thing to do. If you can find one that fits perfectly in your sink, you're good. Saves you all the koshering, and that's totally fine. Yeah. You still need to clean your sink out well, but that's yeah. Okay. Let's go next. Okay, so next, let's jump to something a little bit easier, the fridge. Okay, so people oftentimes will cover their entire fridge. It's a nice, again, let's categorize. Nice thing to do. You're not obligated to line your fridge. Again, your fridge is cold. So anything that touched the floor of your fridge, the walls of your fridge, all of that is, it never became chametz stick. It cannot, almost impossible to become chametz stick because it's a cold surface, okay? The custom, the more, again, because it's sometimes hard to clean certain areas or the areas where the food touches directly, like the fruit drawers, you know, things spill. So the custom is to line those areas or not put things directly onto the, you know, into the drawers, you know, maybe keep it in a bag over Pesach or to line that lightly. But to line the entire fridge, that might be your custom. It's my custom. It's what we do. But there's absolutely no obligation. If we were, I don't know, didn't have the time, I would skip it, okay? You do not have to line your entire fridge. It's only areas that food touches directly that there is a custom, and even that I cannot tell you is fully obligatory. Why? Your fridge, you want to clean it out, make sure there's no chametz on it, because if there's, you know, actual chametz and it touches the bottom of your milk carton, and then you put your milk carton on your kitchen table on Pesach, and then there's stuff touching it, you can, fine, clean it. And if there's an area you can't clean well, just cover it. You don't have to drive yourself crazy, because again, it's not actually chametz stick. You can't make your fridge chametz stick. Okay, and B, the only thing you're looking for is real substance of chametz that may touch other things. Yes.
If you're glass, yeah. Also cover those.
You don't have to. I do. It's a custom. It's certainly not obligatory. We do. It takes a couple of minutes, but you know, the other year my wife was due right around Pesach time. Had we gone to the hospital right before, not a chance. Okay, that's like bottom of the list of things in terms of priorities. Yes. So at least in my fridge, things I kind of fall through sometimes. Like, I don't know. Okay. You have to know so yeah. If you know that it's like fully like, you know, sealed or whatever it is, yeah. Again, it's.
Yeah, but it's the glass, then there's nothing really good.
If there's not, yeah. If you know there's nothing that got in there, wipe it out. You're good. It's yeah.
And years ago, Rabbi Heinemann used to say, don't cover your refrigerator because it's not good for the food.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. You have to know where the vents are. So I think nowadays, at least, I don't know, the modern
fridge.
Oh, circulation,
yeah.
Really? Just with a plastic little cover?
Yeah. I think we used to have racks in our refrigerators. Mm-hmm. Now, yeah, if you have a glass shelf and you cover the glass shelf,
there's no difference.
That's probably a good point.
What are you blocking
about the metal shelving?
What are you blocking? What do you mean?
You used to be open.
You're saying there's no difference now because it's covered anyways. Right. In terms of ventilation, I see.
It goes, got it, I see.
Right, the good old days. Okay. Okay, fine. Let's talk about, okay. All shelves and surfaces. Okay, shelves in your cabinets. Again, there is a custom that people have to line those. You are not obligated to line your cabinets. They are typically, in a normal, typical house, the place where you keep your plates and your spoons, those things should not, you know, again, you wipe them down quickly, but typically, they are not, you know, you're not putting food, typically, again, where you put your cups and your bowls and your plates, right? So you wipe it out quickly to make sure there's nothing there. You're usually just picking up some particles of dust. Some people have the custom of covering it. You are certainly not obligated to cover it, okay? Let's talk about the stovetop, the stoves. Okay, this is the hardest part for many, the second hardest part. So the stovetop, if it's an electric burner, okay, so what you need to do is clean them thoroughly. Again, don't use them for 24 hours and then turn them on the highest setting for about 10 minutes or so until they glow red, usually less, and they are kosher. That kosher is the actual electric elements. The area in between is pretty hard to kosher. You could do one of two things. One, you could just do the pouring of the hot water on the area in between. Okay, that's one way of doing it. You could put foil in between, okay? And that's, you know, also, if that's too difficult, you just have to make sure that nothing touches in between. In between is should be treated as chametz. And ideally, many people put chametz, or they put foil in between, and between the elements themselves, you know, in the space in between, or they kosher it by pouring water. That would be the ideal thing to do. In terms of the back of the, yes? It's enamel. It's not metal. It's not a metal surface in between the elements.
Not a stainless.
Enamel is metal.
That's easy to me. But most, a lot of people have
have an enamel.
An enamel is made of?
It's a coating over metal. It's like glass coating.
Yeah, so if it is a glass coating, let's get to my favorite stovetop, the glass stove. Ah, crazy, right? The glass stovetop, okay? So can you kosher, right, the flat, the more modern glass stovetops, the flat ones, right? Can you kosher those or not? This is a matter of debate. What I tell people to do, not me, but, you know, based on different opinions, is as follows. You basically want to do two. One is, again, you clean it well, you wait 24 hours, you turn on the elements, and that koshers the elements, and then you take water and you pour it, pour it across, and basically that koshers the area in between as a safety. Again, this goes back to what you brought up before. Can you kosher glass? Okay, so there's some debate. As a safety net, we kosher the glass, you pour water over the surface, okay? And so now what happened is you kosher the elements by turning them on, right, to the same heat that they were turned on initially. So kibolo kachpol, so the same way it was absorbed, it goes out. And then the area in between...
Is there an amount of time?
Until it gets red hot. Yeah, give it 10 minutes.
Like an hour.
No. Inside the oven, it takes a while, but the elements on top take, like, they go very quickly. So
once you see red, you're done.
Well, the electric depends on. Sometimes they show up as red just because that's what they do. Like, it's a cool thing. 10 minutes, they're gonna get as hot as they're gonna get. Yeah. So if you have a glass stovetop, what you do is you turn them all on. You don't have to do them at the same time. Turn them all on. They get really, really hot. You wait 10 minutes or so. You can turn them off, and then you can pour water across the whole thing, boiling water. Once you boil the kettle, pour it across, and it'll be the same thing for the electric stovetop. It'd be the same thing if it's made of glass or metal, whatever it's going to be, it'd be the same halacha where you would, as astringency, we would pour water in between, and then we would try to avoid placing things in between the elements on Pesach, okay? So that'd be true for the glass stovetop as well, which is hard with the glass stovetop because that's the whole fun of it. You can just move things across. But we try to avoid moving things. We would try to keep things on the elements. But since we also did this extra koshering, if something moves a little bit, we have what to rely upon. Everyone still with me?
Yeah.
Is this too much? Yeah? Okay, fine. Let's talk about a gas stovetop. So let's actually jump to the oven for a second, the actual oven. If you have a self-clean, thank you, then you want to clean around the door a little bit because that's an area that doesn't get as hot with the self-clean, but you put on the self-clean. From a safety perspective, you probably want to stay in the house, crack open a window. There's occasional situations of fires or whatever it is. So if you're around, you smell smoke, take care of it. So, you know, do it while you're around. But self-clean and you're good to go. You don't have to clean it. And with self-clean, you don't actually have to wait 24 hours before. Because it's libun, it's the highest level of koshering. You don't have to wait. You could just do it right before, whatever, whenever you want to do it. You don't have to wait 24 hours. So that's just a little perk of having self-clean. So again, you want to clean out the door, you know, the part, because the outer part doesn't get, I don't mean outside. I mean the edges of the door. Thank you. Gasket, is that the word? Yeah. So that's area which doesn't get as clean. So you want to clean it. If it doesn't get so clean, you can use a easy off, like any form of toxic type of cleaner, and then therefore that basically like nullifies any of the chametz. Crank it, put on the self clean, and you're good to go. An oven which does not have self clean, you do have to wait 24 hours. You do have to clean it thoroughly, okay? And then you put it on to the highest setting for 45 minutes, okay? And then you're oven is kosher. You don't have to take you could clean it, you could kosher at the same time with the trays inside. And if you have a gas stovetop, what you could do, although it could discolor your things, heads up, but you could take the tops off, the grates off, and you could put them in the oven while it's being, after they were cleaned and also not used for 24 hours and kosher it all that way. Now, some people, I'll take questions 1 second. Some people maybe don't have a stovetop or maybe don't want to get it dirty like that. So what you could do, you have to get, fire gloves. I forget what they're called. What are they called? Well, you could do a blowtorch. I'm always afraid of blowtorches, personally. But you could take if you don't want to put it inside your oven, what you could do is turn your flame on, and again, with appropriate protection, you basically could hold the stove, the grate, over the flame for a minute, okay, and then turn it. Basically make sure each part of it is in the flame. Unless you know what you're doing, I don't recommend it. But in theory, this could be done. You want to hold each part of the gas, the stovetop in the flame itself for about a minute until it gets really hot. I'd recommend putting it in. You might lose some color, but that's the simplest thing too. Yes?
So about the self-cleaning, is that an hour of enough?
You do the whole thing. There's a debate about, how long you need, at what point. I have to look through my text message. I once spoke to someone in the kosher agency who researched this. you know, I remember one of the barometers they gave is like, if you see some ash on the bottom, then obviously it did a good enough job. But the simplest is just to go for the whole cycle. I there is like some point where it's pretty clear that it's done the whole thing.
Because I also use it like my insulin shake on that's another issue, but like if I want to just during the year.
Turn it over to Milchig.
To print apart,
right. So there is a lesser, yeah. I could find. I don't remember offhand. I'm afraid, yeah.
And just another tip for gas stoves. You can order from the manufacturer sometimes a second set of the
grates.
I
hear that. Yeah. Life is. I mean, I imagine supply is a little bit slow these days. But yeah. It's Yes.
I thought that I read that the Stark tape says you could just put a bleph on top of your burners and just turn them on really
you high. Could do that. You could clean them really well and put a blech on top. I'm told that could be that not to do them all at the same time because the level of heat. Yes, the Storkey does say you could just again put it. It has to be a clean blech, right. Not a chamistic blech as well. But if you have like a clean blech, then you'd be able to put it on top and then crank it up, or even like really thick foil, something that's able to hold the heat down under it.
And yeah. What if you don't want to put your rack in self-clean because it makes them slide.
Yeah, so it would be the same thing. You'd have to go, so you'd have to either like put them into a fire, meaning you can't do Eroy for that because the way they got hot is a higher heat than the pouring of the hot water. So it's a little bit harder to find a way to, what you could do is basically clean it really well and then put it on for 45 minutes on the highest setting, right? Which is the lower way of koshering it, and that would be sufficient. Correct, for 45 minutes, as long as it's really clean. Yeah, you could kosher your oven that way, 100%. You could kosher your oven that way, there's no problem. 45 minutes is the, accepted time. Yes?
So in the past years, my grandson came over one year, and he goes, Grandma, you have to cover the back of the stove. And by doing that, I ruined my stove.
Yeah.
My husband said to me, you don't really need to do that.
Yeah. So my house does not have a lot of foil in my house. Yeah. We don't do the foil thing, okay? You have to clean it really well because you're greasy and whatever, but you don't have to cover it. You know, does your food touch, the back of it? Probably not. Like again, your hands touch it, but when you're cooking, you want to clean it really well. The same with the knobs. You want to take your knobs off, clean them really well. You don't have to put foils on the knob. You just want to clean them really well. Just clean it. Again, not just. You have to clean it well because they get caked and oily, et cetera.
The area on top of the stove.
What about the grate?
Yeah.
Like under the microwave or under the top.
Yeah, so you want to clean it really well.
Because that's going to...
Clean it. You want to clean it really well. You want to clean it really well.
Take it out, kosher it?
So many say you don't have to kosher it. Many say you don't have to kosher it. You want to clean it. By the time the steam hits that height, it's probably diffused enough that we're not going to worry about it. And then going back down, it's not an enclosed area. So you want to clean it. You don't want stuff, certainly don't want stuff falling. It's, that's a big deal. But you want to clean it. You don't have to go beyond that. Yes?
I'm sorry. Can we revisit the enamel question? Have you ever seen a white pot?
Yeah.
Okay, that's an enamel.
Is that like earthenware or is that like...
No.
She knows. I'm glad you came. Good. Okay, let's talk about countertops. Okay, so countertops also, they get typically the most, typical thing that happens on countertops is that water, soup, stuff like that is spilling. What you need to do is you need to kosher your countertop. So it depends on the type of countertop, okay? So granite, marble, stainless steel, or other metal countertops, according to everyone, can be koshered. And the way you would kosher it is by taking a pot, and this gets wet and messy and takes a long time. And theoretically, if you could find a steamer that's super duper hot, but apparently you found one?
No, my husband did a little test.
Yeah.
Okay, he can boil with the one that you had recommended.
Yeah.
He can boil his cup of tea.
Okay.
With that steamer.
So okay. If you could get the water that comes out of a steamer to a boil consistently, that's part of the problem. Because I know when I started, I remember, and at one point, I recommended a steamer. I was so excited about these steamers because you could get boiling hot water coming out of the steamer, and the countertops take like so quick. The problem was two things. One is that some people count. I never texted it, but thanks to your husband. But how hot can it actually get? They'll tell you one thing, but whatever. The second thing is I knew for a fact that after a while it's spraying cold water. You have to really test it.
Yeah,
You have to keep on reheating and keep on testing. So, you know, I know when Rabbi Tendler comes around, he actually uses like an industrial, like full-fledged, you know, type of steamer. Those are not cheap, but if you have one which is able to maintain a really, really high heat, then they're able to spray boiling hot water at all times. And you could use that to kosher your countertops. Most people don't have that type of steamer, but it could be done, okay? So what I would recommend, so in theory, but I now I got nervous of recommending, I still feel bad that I've, whatever, it's okay. But the bottom line is that typically the most simple way is either A, cover the countertops. You want to cover with something thick. That would be this one way to do it. You know, it just has to be something thick, which is not going to tear. Similar to the tablecloth, you want to put something, you know, and then typically you're not putting food directly onto your countertops, typically. Typically you're putting your pot, your pan, whatever it is. So you put one thick layer, so people have those, the plastic or the cardboard covered or whatever, or you kosher it by pouring hot water over it, right? And basically the same way, again, the hot water has to go over the entire surface. So it depends how big your countertops are. It could get pretty wet, it could get pretty hot. You want to do it carefully, but that would be the way to kosher it. You want to make sure it's very clean. You want to make sure it wasn't used for 24 hours prior. You want to make sure there are no thick, deep cracks because it's hard to clean those out. Fine. Now there is some debate about formica or plastic. Many people say not to, but there is a reliable source, the CRC, the Chicago Rabbinical Council, is actually of the opinion that you could. Again, this goes back to our discussion before. Can you kosher plastic on Pesach? Some say yes. And so if, you know, there is what's to rely upon to kosher a plastic, you know, a formica or what are they, the coated, what's the other one that they have? Like, Corian, okay. Okay, so there are different materials which are, you know, more plastic type, more man-made. Those would, according to some, you're able to kosher those, and people rely on that. Not everyone does, but there is what's to rely upon.
Is that new? Is that something new that they came
out? I don't know. I don't know. But yeah. Pretty novel. I know that's a game changer. There you go. Chicago happens to be. I just want to let you, as a general rule, you know, when I tell people, like, if you want to look up halacha in general, kosher halacha, like, OU, star K, CRC. Either of those, like, okay, there's many others, but those, like, no one could have any qualms. Like, those are about as, and again, and they have different opinions. Star K has these leniencies and these stringencies. CRC has these leniencies and these stringencies. You know, but between the three of them, if you're relying on any of their views about anything, you're 100%. I'm not saying others aren't, but those are, like, the simplest. CRC, OU, Star K, anything they're saying, I wouldn't think twice before relying on. Yes, Shelly, sorry.
So there's something you're supposed to do every year on your granite countertops. You're supposed to spray the sealant on.
Oh, yeah.
In theory.
Right. Well, actually, you know, it has something like that. The one time of the year there's nothing on my counter for.
If you see like actual cracks, no. Then if it's just doing to, it just bond, it like binds it. Is that what it does?
It keeps it.
Yeah, I would do it after, just because like it might create a film. I guess. Like I think. I don't know how. Like I don't know the. I've never done it, to be honest with you, on my countertops. But I imagine like I would just be nervous about like you know what like. It has to be a clean countertop when you're koshering it. So if this is like a filmy type of thing of any sort. Then it doesn't. Yeah.
It's like polishing your floors.
Okay, so then if the substance, yeah, so you want to make sure there's no film left, you know. But if there's, assuming you could do that, then it's fine. Then it's fine. You could do it before or after. Yeah, there'd be no. Again, as long as you can clean it really well, that there's no substance at all at that point. Okay, let's talk about soaps, shampoos, things of that nature. So again, this is my CRC, ruling. And basically, you know, any soaps, shampoos, some people do have the custom making sure their soaps and shampoos are kosher for Pesach. They are of the opinion that you do not need to do so, that it is not edible. And therefore, even if there is a little bit of chametz perhaps mixed in, you don't have to worry about it. And therefore, soaps, shampoos, you don't have to go through your cupboards to take care of. There's more of a debate when it comes to perfumes and deodorants, which have you know, alcohol in it or wheat germ, vitamin E, those things which have some level of wheat and a little bit more of you know, again, sadly, you know, someone who's like a real alcoholic would sometimes, you know, take some perfume or whatever it is. It is technically edible. So there's more of a debate around those things, but still there's what to rely upon to just use the same deodorant, the same perfume and all that on Pesach. Yes.
The same opinion say, I've heard like scented soaps, anything that has a smell.
The opinion says all those soaps, it doesn't matter what they smell, all the same. The bottom line is they're not edible, and therefore you can use them. You don't have to switch them all out.
Some shampoos
Right there.
Wheat germ. Yeah, or Aveeno soap, you know, is like, it's wheat, or whatever. It's great, right? Oats, excuse me. It's oats, excuse me. Yes.
Do you need to get a new bottle?
Bottle of? No. So again, assuming you're not having like a hamburger and you're, you know, whatever. Sorry. Sorry. What's it called? Yeah. So the bottom line is, yeah, it's all, you know, it's fine. It's your bathroom. It's clean. So, you know, bottom line is soap, shampoos, deodorants. I personally don't switch out. There is a stronger custom when it comes to things that touch your mouth. Okay. So toothpaste to make sure that they're kosher for Pesach. You don't have to buy the kosher brand with all due respect to whatever. There's like a huge list between, I don't remember. Oh, you start, whatever. Just look at those three. Yeah, it's the Star K Kolel in California. They make this huge list and enough tradition. They have a short list you can access online. That's right. There you go. Yeah, and it's like Colgate. It's enough standard stuff, you know, that they're able to get stuff touching your mouth. So lipstick, either get a new one or to rub off the, you know. But ideally, you want to get kosher for Pesach stuff. You know, our cosmetic who Davins in our shul appreciates this one. It's always a plug for forget. Okay, so there's a custom anything touching your mouth to make sure that it's kosher for Pesach. Okay, but even that, strictly speaking, I can't tell you're obligated. Certainly, a toothbrush. I think that's universal. Everyone gets a new toothbrush. Your toothbrush. It's not as clean as you think it is. So you know, you want to get a clean one. Technically speaking, it's probably not chametz, but that is the custom. Get anything coming to the mouth, new toothbrush, you know, items which touch the mouth. Ideally, we get ones that are kosher for Pesach. Again, you can check the short or long list that's put out with all those things. Okay. Questions? Okay. Let's go a little bit further. Okay. Towels and, yeah, tablecloth. So tablecloths. Do you need a kosher for Pesach tablecloth? Strictly speaking, the answer is no. Strictly speaking, if it's cleaned really well, hot water, soap, strictly speaking, you do not. It's a custom to have special ones for Pesach. Concern it wasn't cleaned well or things of that nature. But strictly speaking, a person does not need to get a new tablecloth. So if you are stuck, you don't have one, whatever, you could just wash in hot water with soap and you could use the same tablecloth you used during the year.
You're talking about a cloth table.
Something that could be cleaned, correct. If it can't be cleaned, I would not use it. Yeah, I would avoid it. I would avoid it. It's a little too dangerous. Again, because again, as we saw, the rest of the house, you don't have to clean the crumbs, but on your kitchen, your dining area, you want to be a lot more careful. Medicine, any bitter, you know, any pills you're taking, don't even ask the question. Just continue taking any capsules, pills that you need that your doctor wants you to take. Just take. Again, there are different opinions, but I'm telling you, you know, yes. Yeah, so you know, I always struggle to know, like, how to categorize supplements. Like, if it's a necessary thing, you know, then it's a necessary thing. If it's, like, an extra, and I can't define for a person what is an extra and what's not.
So, like, a long-term versus I'll feel it, you know, like, let's say that.
Right.
Everybody takes fish oil. All kinds of people take fish oil.
Right.
Missing a day
is not going to make a difference. Yeah. So anything that missing a day, like, and you're confident, I get nervous, like, telling, like, you miss your whatever medicine today, you probably will also make a difference, but I'm not going to say that. Like, that's not a good idea. So I'm talking about, yeah, fish oil, whatever, something like that. If it's something which you know for a fact, missing a day, I would strongly urge you to find out that it's actually kosher for Pesach. The Star K, call them early. They're very good at this. As you should know, it's the only organization that will actually answer questions of things that are not under their own label, which is very special. Meaning you could call them and say, hey, I have this medicine, you know, and they'll typically, again, call them early. Don't call them like Erev Pesach. It's not nice. But call them, you know, whatever, ask them that I have this medicine. It doesn't have a, is it okay? And they have some people there who, you know, who are knowledgeable enough who will be able to answer that question for you. So if it's a supplement, something you're confident you don't need on a regular basis, those are things that even if there's no flavor, I would urge you to make sure that it's kosher for Pesach. And if it's not, I would try to find an alternative. Yes. Yeah. It should be kosher. It should be kosher. If it's
there
are lists. Yeah.
So
I think the Star K has a list even for their year. I'm trying to remember where I've seen a list. I think Star K. There's a couple of lists. Some I don't remember. Those three. Check between those three sites. There are lists. Yeah. Anything that has a good flavor. Anything that that's like you could eat normally. You should make sure is kosher during the year and kosher for Pesach on Pesach, okay? And again, start going through your medicine cabinets now. It's hard. Like, sometimes I get a call like 2 hours before Pesach. I have no, I don't know this stuff. Like, you have to know, like, you have, need a significant background in all, so you really want to do the research beforehand. Okay, let's jump to the Seder nights. Just a couple of things. Just, you know, people sometimes overdo it with some of the stuff. So let's just talk about measurements for a moment. This is my other favorite part to talk about. So, can you use light grape juice? Yes. Can you use grape juice? Yes. Is it ideal to use wine? Yes, if it's not going to hurt you. If you don't like wine, then you shouldn't use wine. But it is ideal to use wine. It's seen as much more, royal to use wine. And there is a custom to use red wine and not white wine. Okay. How big of a cup and how much do you have to drink? There is a thing about having a not mevushel. It is okay for it to be mevushel as well. Okay. How large should the cup be? Okay. So it's important. Let's go backwards. Ideally, a person should drink the entire cup. Okay. So now, you want to be planful. Don't use like a kosher Eliyahu for your cup. Because if you're supposed to be drinking the whole cup, you kind of like, very nice, you have this big cup, but you kind of lost something else on the flip side. You really want to try to drink the whole cup, and therefore, it's ideal to use a smaller cup. The size of the cup, 3 ounces. 3 ounces, not very large, okay? 3 ounces, the cup, the size of the cup that you want to use. This year, on the first night of Pesach, it actually has to be larger, without getting into all the background, because it's two things. The first cup is both, exactly, because it's Shabbos, it's Kiddush, and it's the first cup, so you want it to be 4.5 ounces, 4.4 technically, but a little larger. But even that's not like huge, but the rest of the cups could be 3 ounces, and you ideally drink the whole thing. If you can't drink the whole thing, you drink the majority of the cup, and you're good to go. Okay? That's for the one. Yes?
So
whoever is, it depends on what your cup, so it's just, I haven't found so many, my house, we all say the brachos together. Is that, yeah? Okay. So if everyone's making Kiddush, then you have to have that size. If you have one person making Kiddush, then only that person needs that cup.
So that's 4.5 ounces, and normally it's 3 ounces.
And the rest of the three cups could be 3 ounces. Just the first cup. Only the first cup, 4.5 ounces. Yes. But if you... I apologize. I'm going to say it again slowly. Normally, all four cups, 3 ounces. Drink ideally the whole cup, if not the majority of the cup. This year, because there's a dual first cup, only the first cup is dual. It's both the cup of the first of the four abrakosos, and it's Kiddush. Therefore, the first cup by whomever is making Kiddush, be it just the one leading the Seder, or if everyone makes Kiddush, everyone, 4.5-ish ounces for the cup. Okay, yes?
We all say Kiddush on Yom Kippur also. I mean, the first
cup is
Kiddush on Yom
Kippur. Right, so there's an extra, because of the Shabbos Kiddush, there is an... The post can bring down that because Shabbos Kiddush, it's a special, an additional obligation in addition to the Yom Tov. Correct. The first cup is Kiddush, but the Shabbos Kiddush, excuse me, I misspoke, but it's the Shabbos Kiddush as well. The post can say to have a second cup. Two other measurements that are important. One is maror. How much maror do you have to eat? So if you are eating just, you don't have to have the bitter stuff. You have romaine lettuce. It's basically like one big leaf. Okay, one big leaf is enough for a measurement of maror. If you're having ground horseradish, like it's an ounce. Okay, 1 ounce, not a ton. You can mix and match, so you can mix the two together, figure that out. But those are your measurements for. There's two times we eat maror. So a big stalk, one of those big stalks of lettuce, or imagine what that is. You could add, but basically it should be about the size of a big stalk. And if you're again, it's 1 ounce of maror. That's what you're looking to do. Okay, now. Matzah, my favorite part, because people eat like a box of matzah each time, which is insanity. Okay, so what are the
$37 a pound.
And 37, oh my gosh, my wife called me from the store. It's like, whatever. Okay, prices, Costco. Okay, we found once at Walmart. Okay, anyway.
BJ's
too. Amazing. Okay, so what are the measurements of matzah? So here's the deal. This is what you have to know. The first and last time, we eat matzah 3 times during the Seder. Right? Motzi matzah for korech, right? We have the sandwich, and then for afikomen. The first and the last are, let's call them biblical obligations, okay? And therefore, the measurement is going to be larger. The middle one, sandwich, get it? It's in the middle. That one is rabbinic, and therefore the measurement is smaller, okay? So here is the typical measurements. Let's say you use handmade matzahs, which are typically a little bit larger, typically a little denser. So for the first and last, the larger ones, you need a third of a handmade matzah. It's not so much matzah, okay? Third of a handmade matzah for the first and the last one, okay? The middle one, it's smaller since it's rabbinic, the sandwich, the middle, a quarter of a handmade matzah, okay? Really not, in total, not that much matzah, okay? So a third, a quarter, a third. If you're eating square machine matzah, then it's a little bit, again, it's a little smaller and it's a little less dense. So it's a half, a third, a half. Okay? So if you're eating, again, machine matzah, the squares, a half, a third, a half. If you're eating the round ones, it's a third, a quarter, a third. Okay? I hope that saved you a few calories over Pesach. Whatever, you know, you should eat a tiny bit more to be safe, but that's the bottom line in terms of measurements according to, you know, I believe that's based on Rav Heinemann, if I remember correctly. So we're not, this isn't like the leniency of the day. This is, this is a legitimate view. I understand. That's what I understand. With all due respect to those things. Yeah. So you can measure. One amazing thing that my brother taught, my brother's like a real yucky, so what he taught me to do is brilliant. So it depends on how many people you have at your Seder, but you know, what we do now is that Erev Pesach, we actually break up the mat, we take like a ton of like little plastic bags, and I actually divide up the matzah ahead of time, so you're not sitting there for like a 5 minute, like 10 minute gap. And basically when we get to Motzi Matzah, you know, I have for each person, I have three bags ready to go. Okay, so we say Motzi Matzah, it's worth the time ahead of, trust me. Because you know, every hour, like later in the night, it's like an extra hour and everyone's like waiting for the matzah and awkward. So basically we pregame, okay, it takes like a half hour or so, 40 minutes, depends on how many people it gets. What? Not weigh it, but we measure it all. We put it into bags. So all my, I have like a pile of bags for Motzi Matzah. I have a pile of bags for Afikoman, a pile of bags for Korech, and it is so good. So then I give, thank you. And then I give a tiny crack from the matzah that I made Hamotzi on. Right? Because they're supposed, right? Because we talk about Lecha Mishnah people, right? So good. So then I hand out. That takes 3 seconds, like we do on Shabbos day. So everyone already got their, when they go to wash, I'm putting matzah on their seats. Okay? I make the bracha. I crush it. We pass it around. Everyone takes a little crack of that. Oh, it's so much better. So much better. Okay. Come on. At some point, it's like we're spinning wheels. Okay. Okay, you're right. Fair. If you have time, it's a good thing to do. That's my crash, I don't know what. Just a couple of halachos which I thought are pertinent. Obviously, there's a lot more, but I hope this is helpful. Okay, gonna run. Feel free, if you have any follow-up questions, feel free to catch me. Not now, because I gotta run. Good luck on the campaign.